No slave can serve two masters. For a slave will either hate the one and love the other, or be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth. This parable is a doozy. The parable of the shrewd steward is indeed an enigmatic one. Many have tried to interpret this parable ever since it was first told. Let us try to understand it in a kind of a modern setting to see and see whether we can make any sense out of it. Upon conducting an audit of the company, the CEO of a large corporation is found squandering the wealth of the corporation, and he is called on the carpet to explain himself. Realizing that no defense is possible, and being aware that he may be sent to serve time in prison or become a pauper, he devises a plan. By reducing the debt people owe to the corporation, he hopes to curry favor with debtors so that he will be on their good side, and in the future it may benefit him. He calls them one by one and reduces the debt significantly to the point that they can easily pay back the amount they owe to the corporation. So far, so good. What upsets the whole thing, though, at the end, our parable concludes that with a simple statement, the master commended the dishonest steward for acting prudently. What is problematic for us readers is that this parable scarcely explains the saying which follows it. In praising the shrewdness of the children of this world, Jesus tells his disciples, make friends for yourself with the dishonest wealth. Does it sound like Jesus? And praises the actions that are direct opposite of those of the manipulating manager. The person who is trustworthy in very small matters is also trustworthy in great ones. And no servant can serve two masters, which is exactly what this manager succeeds in doing. So let us look at this parable in the context of the lost and found parables of Jesus. He just had finished telling those parables, the parable of the lost sheep, the lost coin, and of course the parable of the prodigal son. And chapter 16 begins with this parable of the shrewd manager. Comparing this parable with the parable of the prodigal son, one could see so many similarities. Both the prodigal son and the shrewd manager squandered the wealth, and both came to a severe crisis in their life. If you read the soliloquies of both these people, the prodigal son and the shrewd manager, you see how similar they are. The prodigal decided to go back to his father and apologize to him and offered to pay back to the father by working for him as a hired hand. The shrewd manager decided to let go his own probable commission and maybe some of the exorbitant interest and give the debtors reduced payback amount. And in the end, in both stories, the guilty parties, the prodigal son as well as the shrewd manager, were restored because of their admission of guilt and the measures they took to remedy them, though they were woefully inadequate. In this parable, Jesus praised the children of this age for their shrewdness in getting out of jail, so to speak, getting out of jail free. According to this parable, there is a lesson to learn from the children of this age. If the children of this age with their dishonest wealth can act such a way that they can restore themselves, how much more responsibly, ethically, morally are the children of the light expected to act and live? In doing so, Jesus is reminding the children of the light that their primary loyalty is to God and not to wealth and all human machinations and entanglements. So this is what I believe this lesson is, this parable of shrewd manager points us to. At a time like ours, when church going and church giving take a back seat for many of our parishioners, and when our people have many options for spending their Sunday mornings, churches also tend to avoid asking for significant sacrifice and try to make church involvement as easy as possible for their parishioners. For instance, on a Sunday morning here, we try to cram everything, worship, fellowship, education, etc., into a very limited time allotted for God, lest we interfere with the Almighty sports schedules. Let us admit it. Church is no longer central to the lives of the children of light. Our faith no longer demands much from us. Having been saved by grace and assured of our eternal salvation, we ask, why must we go to church? Why must we give to church? Why must we make any sacrifices? We have become used to a tamed and domesticated church. In negotiating our lives in this age, children of the light often lose to the children of this age. We have become used to Christianity that does not make any claim on us, on our time, on our lives, and on our resources. The church we have become used to is the one that is there for me when I need it for my child's baptism or my daughter's wedding or my dad's funeral, merely for the sacramental stuff. The church we have become used to is the one that shouldn't challenge our views on social issues, our ideologies, our way of living, and our priorities. It is for this reason the reading for today is a difficult one, a demanding one, and a challenging one for all of us. Gospel calls us to make sacrifices, set priority, and let go of possessions for the sake of the kingdom of God. Jesus says, "Seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all these things shall be added to you." Now, making sacrifices and counting the cost of being a Christian with its values are not unfamiliar concepts for us. We all do. If we are to contemporize Jesus saying a bit for our times, how would it read? What parent wouldn't count the cost before signing up his or her child for the traveling soccer team? And what new employee wouldn't consider whether she is willing to work every weekend her first year? All of us do make sacrifices. All of us do make decisions based on certain values. And all of us let go of certain things in life so that we can attain the things that we really want. And many of us have at times made these decisions to the exclusion of church and its activities. In a sense, what is it that the gospel passage is calling us our attention to? I believe that is asking us to give priority to God. I believe it is calling us to ask ourselves what is really important in the long arc of our lives and what we really hope for our families and for us. And as our children are beginning a new school year, let us see how we can assist them to have a life marked by a relationship with God, to have confidence in God's love for them and others, and to have the knowledge that whatever may happen or whatever they may go, that God, wherever they may go, that God is with them. The intent of the gospel is to bring us to a point of clarity and decisiveness. Jesus wants us to follow him for the right reason. He is not looking for a crowd or a crown. He is looking for disciples who are informed about radical discipleship and cross, rather than crowd who is clueless and looking for painless victory. He very much desires our company, but do we desire his company badly enough to sacrifice everything else? Let us ask ourselves this question: what is important to us? The goal is to bring our life into focus. What focus do I want for my life? What direction do I want to be moving in? And what framework do I want to live my life by? How would these reflect my deepest values, my priorities, my strongly held beliefs? Answering these questions would help us in being good stewards of our relationship, our time, and our resources.